Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 22. Our Wednesday edition, we generally like to get a beat writer from the opposing team. We've had a little difficulty sorting that out, so hopefully we'll have either a separate podcast on Thursday with the coverage of the Houston Texans from a Houston beat writer, or we will fold it into our Friday podcast. But Dave, first of all, Steeler Nation is up in arms about the offensive line, the running game, the fact that they beat the Indianapolis Colts 23-20 on a Sunday night nationally televised game where they were favored by 10.5. All I can say is, would you rather be a fan of the Jets or the Patriots this week, where the Patriots lost to the Bills, the Jets lost to the Raiders, and the San Diego Chargers, one of the favorites in the AFC, beat the Kansas City Chiefs by 4 at home? I mean, it maybe isn't perfect, but let's put it all in perspective.
Yeah, a win's a win. I think we mentioned the other day that there's no style points involved, and Tomlin makes sure everybody knows that all the time. I went back and broke down, finished my offensive line breakdown report, and you know the obvious things there, of course, were Jonathan Scott to play at left tackle, which was probably the worst game he's had in a Steelers uniform. Let's face it. The running game had a few flaws in it. You know, one thing that I think everybody's missing in this is Heath Miller and Hines Ward did not have good games blocking. I mean, it was pretty evident out on the edge on quite a few plays where I thought the rest of the line had done a good job. But, you know, they missed key blocks on the edges that could have sprung another 6, 7, 8 yards along the way there. You know, there were also some runs, too. You know, everybody was talking about how Mendenhall's, wasn't hitting the hole hard. And I found that as well. There were a few times where there were some lanes opened up for Mendenhall that I guess he didn't either trust it, to cut towards it, or if he the tendency of his to want to bust things outside. Was pretty evident. He's not hitting the hole hard, and I think he left some yards on the table there by not hitting the hole hard. Now, was the run blocking excellent? No, it absolutely wasn't, but it wasn't as bad as what I expected to find going back through the tape. I thought Pouncey played a pretty good game, especially in pass protection. Doug Ligurski, I thought, was okay, much better on the move to the left side. Chris Kimuatu, I thought, had a good game, you know, against that front. But, you know, it boiled down to not running good on early downs, and thank God they had Roethlisberger to convert those third downs, as Tomlin mentioned yesterday in his press conference. But I don't know. They can build on it. They had a few injuries that we'll get to here in a moment. But I'm with you, Dave. I mean, it's a win. Of course, Steeler Nation is going to find, tear anything apart, whether it be a win or a loss. And they tend to do so even more in some close game wins against teams that they're supposed to blow out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Look, the whole point of this podcast is to critique what goes on and talk about what's going on around the Steelers. And when they play well, we want to applaud them for playing well. And when they play poorly, we want to critique what they did wrong. I guess I'm a little bit with you. And let's, before we get into some more analysis of the Colts, let's talk about how they came out of the game physically. I know we had three offensive linemen banged up. We talked about Arnez Battle. Why don't you recap where we stand going into kind of, what today we'll learn a lot more after today's practice?
Well, for one thing, Tomlin's going to switch up the practice, schedule as far as pads and helmets. I guess, realistically, normally he would like to have some pads on Wednesday, get them in just helmets on Thursday. He's going to switch that up and have the helmets today and then pads possibly on Thursday to give a few of these guys some time to get better. Chris Carter.
Dave, I have to tell you, I hadn't really thought about it with the whole new practice schedule that they have and the limited participation. I think they're only allowed 13 full pad practices in the course of the whole season. And I hadn't really thought about how I'd lay out the schedule. But I guess I'm a little surprised, knowing that guys are coming out of a game getting banged up, particularly a Sunday night game, that just the general schedule isn't to have a non-pad practice Wednesday and the padded practice Thursday. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we don't know fully if, you know, shells or whatnot and what's going on as far as the physicality of practices.
No shells. I mean, it's you got pads one day, you got no pads the other day.
Right.
Helmets and nothing else.
Right. And I don't know how physical practices he's really having, though, you know, but I think it's smart not to. I mean, heck, you know, if you play a game late Sunday night and you're practicing on Wednesday, it would make sense that you might just go helmet only on Wednesday and do your pads on Thursday. So
I would think you would do that every week, but just curious if you had any opinion on that.
Well, I mean, that's what I would do. I would have my pads on Thursday, but of course, like I said, there's so many unknown variables that we don't know what happens in practice. So kind of hard for me to really, you know, give a educated opinion on that. So
yeah, we'll have to get some insights on that from maybe Ed or Mark on what the thought behind that is.
Yeah. Now, as far as injury goes, you know, Chris Carter had finally battled back from his hamstring injury and was active on Sunday night against the Colts. And evidently that, you know, that hamstring had some soreness in it. And also, you know, he might be up in the air this week, but I mean, let's face it, he's not an every down player. He's just a special teams guy. Marcus Gilbert, that left shoulder appears to be fine, according to Tomlin. He should be able to practice this week. He will stay at right tackle from what Tomlin's saying. And Jonathan Scott's battling probably a high ankle sprain. I would seriously doubt that he's ready to go this week. With that, it might actually be a couple of weeks on that. I think he has it in a boot and all like that. So if that's the case, it seems like Trey Essex is going to start at left tackle in his place. Arnez Battle evidently has some knee swelling and soreness. I don't think this is the first time that he's battled this either. I think in training camp he had a little problem with that as well. So, you know, that's something to watch as the special teams captain, special teams ace. Brett Kiesel with that knee, really, he's termed as questionable. I might be a little surprised if he's up this week too. So they're going to monitor him, and we'll know what we need to know on that by Thursday. By Friday at the latest, when the full scale.
I think you sprain a knee. I think it'd be very surprising if you're back in playing the second week. I think kind of that's the thing that typically 2 to 3 full weeks off before then getting involved. So. I'm with you on Kiesel. I'm with you on Battle. I don't expect either of them. I'm with you on Carter. And I'm guessing Scott doesn't play either. So it's going to be interesting. We're just taking semi-stabs in the dark here. But with the history of injuries and seeing how guys progress and how the Steelers like to handle those things, I mean, they certainly have to be pretty close to a full go on Thursday to participate. And I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, Doug Legursky's also got a shoulder, and he's kind of termed questionable right now too. So if he doesn't go, Ramon Foster will get a start at right guard. So he bears watching. He mentioned Cotchery and McFadden are both candidates to be up this week. I think you had said a couple podcasts ago that, you know, McFadden's probably done starting. And the way they played the other night, I could see even if McFadden's active, him, probably not being the first guy out there. You could see William Gay and Keenan Lewis again. Mike Wallace had a rib cartilage problem evidently in that last game. Tomlin doesn't seem too concerned about it. It might explain why he lost a few snaps out there on the field on Sunday night as well. So, you know, we don't know what other surprises will pop up on the first injury report that comes out about 3 or 4 o'clock later this afternoon, but I'll have it up on SteelersDepot.com.
Yep. And so The two focuses clearly on talk radio in the press conference with Mike Tomlin yesterday are, one, what's the status of the offensive line? What will you do in terms of positioning? And you just mentioned it. It sounds like the plan is to keep Marcus Gilbert at right tackle, and Trey Essex will be the guy who goes in and plays left tackle if Jonathan Scott can't go. And Tomlin was very clear to say that he didn't condemn Jonathan Scott's performance. And so he said, if Jonathan Scott is healthy enough to go, he will go. If he is not healthy enough to go, Essex goes, and Gilbert's going to stay on the right side. So I think the two question marks, it sounds like, from coming out of that press conference are, who's going to start at right guard? If Legursky's healthy, again, he'll get the start. And if not, as you said, Ramon Foster. And then we were speculating last week, or last podcast on Monday, It's not going to be Gilbert who moves over. He's going to stay on his side, even though, you know, I'd certainly expect coming into camp next year that he's the starting left tackle. He's going to stay at right tackle probably, you know, it looks like now the whole year. If they don't move him now, there's no point in moving him later unless you have a rash of injuries. And it looks like Trey Essex will be the guy on the left side. The second thing was just what you brought out in the open. You know, the two things, I guess, really. Rashard Mendenhall, is he running effectively? Is he picking the right holes? And then there has been some tempered criticism of Ben. And I think there are two ways to look at Ben's performance in that game and so far this year. You know, the first game against Baltimore was a disaster across the board. So you throw that out and you say, you look at the Sunday night game against the Ravens, and Ben turned it over three times. Now, you can argue the offensive line was putting him in really bad situations and he's got to protect the ball better. And that is a legitimate argument. Having said that, I think Ben played a very good game at quarterback throwing the ball. He threw the one high interception. He missed one or two other passes, Antonio Brown on the sideline. But he put up big numbers. He got the Steelers to an early lead, and he also, you know, directed the game-winning drive. So hard for me to find a lot of fault with Ben's performance, but certainly ball protection is going to be a key focus going forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you got to take the good with the bad. I mean, he's going to probably give up some sack fumbles the way he likes to hold the ball in the pocket and all, and extend a play. That's to, you know, that's going to be expected when you have you know, what you got as far as left tackle over there for, you know, giving up what Jonathan Scott's given up. You know, a funny thing, too, people keep asking about Max Starks and Flozo Adams. It's the constant chatter on Twitter, on the message boards, on talk radio. Folks, this is not going to happen. I mean, it's just not going to happen. You know, he talked about, you know, maybe bringing some guys in for a look, depending on how the early week of practice goes. And I suspect they'll bring in some, you know, Class B and Class C, you know, street free agents. But he also said anybody that they sign is going to be for practice purposes only, and not, you know, these guys won't be playing in the game or expected to contribute in the near future. And that, I mean, that's what you're going to get in late September. Flozo Adams, yeah, you could probably sign him to a craft, you know, crafty contract that maybe, I think Ed Bouchette laid it out best this morning in his blog post, you know, 4 years, $4 million, $4 million signing bonus stretched out over 4 years. You know, you can make that contract say anything you want, but the reality is it still has to be cap friendly for this year. And you, are you going to mortgage a future on a guy, you know, like that, just, you know, that's just as much of an injury concern going forward. And the thing with Max Starks is there's some sort of rift there with Starks. Okay, the guy's lost evidently considerable amount of weight, supposedly had a good workout with the Vikings, I believe, on yesterday. There is a rift of some sorts with Starks and Colbert, or Starks and Arians, or Starks and somebody in that organization, and he's just not an option. They're not going to bring him back. So, you know, as tied up as they are against a salary cap, I wrote about this just the other day, anything that they do right now is going to be in-house. So if that means Jermon Meredith is the next guy up, or Chris Scott's the next guy up, I fully expect that to be the case, because you might as well get it out of your head about Flozell and Max Starks being Steelers this year.
I agree with everything you said. The only thing I don't agree with would be that there's a rift. I think it's a football evaluation thing. I heard Max Starks talk after he went in and spoke to Art Rooney II when he was released, and I heard Art Rooney speak. Both spoke in glowing terms of Max in terms of the organization, and Art Rooney in terms of Max. Said they wouldn't shut the door, but, you know, nothing at this time. And I, you know, I just think it's, as you said, he came in, he wasn't in great football shape. The Steelers decided to move forward with the contract thing. And I think when you do that, you know, you're probably not looking to go back and revisit that. So I don't know that it was anything more than a talent evaluation aspect.
You know what I would, and you know what I would do with this all. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they've had some injuries. They've had some injuries last year. They piecemealed it together. What I would start doing with this offensive line is I would start, you know, stop being, you know, cute as far as blocking assignments and all like that. I would just straight ahead, you know, try to power run, especially right up the middle. I think they can get good push early in the game. If Mendenhall starts hitting the hole, start using Redmond perhaps a little bit more than he's been used. You know, the talent level this line right now is just going to have to, you know, suffice. And can they win? Yeah, I think they can win. It's going to be some bumps and bruises along the way, especially against some great athletic defensive ends like we saw this past week. But you know, it is what it is. I hate to keep using that, and I'm not defending anything that's been made. Let's face it, they like the skill positions and the speed and the wide receivers more than they like the offensive line. Tomlin's even hit on this before that you're you know, the best way to attack is to attack. And that's why the offensive line's been put on hold, you know, and piecemeal together over the years. And this is what you get when you have a couple of injuries like this. Willie Colon was a big loss, but you know, that's just what I would do. I would start straight ahead power running and not get so cute with these traps and all, because I think Kimo Atu's lost a step or two with this knee. You got a lot of people that are playing out of position for the most part. And God forbid if you run into a situation where you have Meredith at right tackle. And let's say, I actually think Gilbert should be moved to left tackle now if that's where he's going to end up. But, of course, I don't see the day-to-day stuff either. But, you know, just deal with it. And they're going to win some games this year. They're going to lose some games, going forward. But I still think this is a team that can make it to the playoffs regardless of the offensive line right now.
Yeah, Dave, let's talk about a couple things coming out of the game. We have 3 weeks of data now after this game, Sunday against the Texans, which should be a great game to watch. I'm very much looking forward to this game. You know, after this game, we'll be 25% of the way through the season. So we're not there yet, but we have something to evaluate the season on. They've played three games. I guess when I'm thinking about personnel and who's, kind of names that stick out to me, obviously – Mike Wallace has picked up where he left off. He has a chance to tie an NFL record for consecutive 100-yard games this week. He's been fantastic. And offensively, Antonio Brown's done a really nice job, and on special teams. Defensively, it's great to see that Troy is fully healthy. I thought he played the best game he's played in close to a year on Sunday night. It's good to see James Harrison back having an impact this past week. But I guess more on the other side, the two guys that, or maybe the three guys that I'm most focused on, are Lamar Woodley and Aaron Smith. The left side of that Steelers defense have been more or less non-existent in the first 3 weeks. And you mentioned this, and I think Heath Miller's done a good job catching the ball, but we haven't seen quite the physical nature of him blocking that we've seen in years past. Anything to get worried about, or 3 weeks in, let's give it a couple more weeks before we pass any judgment? And I guess I'd also throw Casey Hampton in there as well.
Well, I think with Heath Miller, that was really, this past week was out of character for him, in my opinion. I thought the first two games he actually played very well blocking. They used him in the passing game this past week too. I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of fatigue of being used so much in the passing game. I kind of doubt it. I just think it was an execution standpoint and the loud crowd and not getting off the ball real well. On the defensive side of the ball, Lamar Woodley's not making the impact yet. I mean, his pressures are down from this same point last season. He claimed on Trib Live Radio yesterday afternoon when he sat in with Ike Taylor that he's having to drop more, but I'm not really seeing that as I see that more as an excuse, because I'm not really seeing that he's having to drop any more than he has over the previous couple of years, especially last year, you know. So that might have a little bit to it, but I mean, on you know, the thing is, when you are rushing the quarterback, you need to be getting home and providing good pressure, and that's something he has not done yet. Aaron Smith, boy, this guy, you know, he rebounded against the Seahawks, but it was against the Seahawks. Had a bad first game against the Ravens. Sunday night, he did not look good against the Colts and was getting blown off the ball. Casey Hampton seems more worried about people cut blocking him right now. I think he'll get over this. Maybe not this week, because let's face it, I've gone back and watched these Texans games. Their offensive line's solid, man. I mean, they are a solid unit, and they're going to get after it, especially with some cut, you know, chop blocks this coming Sunday. Who was the other question that you had on defense?
Well, the Woodley, Woodley Smith and Hampton on defense.
Yeah, and you know,
and then we're talking about Heath on the offensive side.
And you know, Timmons, I thought's played okay in the middle there. He, you know, he's just not being sent on the blitzes as much because the Steelers A didn't have to blitz as much early on against the Seahawks. So I think the quarter, you know, after this week, after a quarter point in the season, is when you can start drawing a lot more conclusions because you know you've had a horrible game against the Ravens. You had a good game against the Seahawks, a mediocre game basically on both sides of the ball against the Colts, and then now you're going to run up against a buzzsaw that can put points on the board this week in the Texans. So I think you'll really be able to draw some conclusions of what they are and are not after this Sunday's game.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, we know the Steelers' schedule is front-loaded in terms of difficulty. Three of the first four games here on the road. We're, you know, looking at it with Peyton Manning healthy, there's a distinct possibility, even were things going well for the Steelers, they could have come out of these first four games 1-3. Now, obviously, worst case scenario is 2-2. Best case is 3-1. If they go down and beat Houston in Houston, everybody can breathe a big sigh of relief. And I'm not saying you can punch your playoff ticket, but there's a reason they're a 4-point dog in this game. Houston's a really good team. And, you know, I thought it was going to happen last year. It didn't happen because defensively they just weren't there. But with the additions of Jonathan Joseph at corner and the kid from the Bears at safety, you know, they've added Manning at safety. They've added some guys to make that defense better. They've got Wade Phillips there being the coordinator. This is a team that I think is fully ready to step into the, you know, top five elite of the AFC with the Patriots, the Chargers, the Steelers, the Ravens. I mean, this team, to me, is right there. And not only are the Steelers going to find out a lot about themselves, the Texans are going to find out a lot about themselves this week as well.
Well, you know, we just hit on their offensive line playing great, and Andre Johnson is a beast at wide receiver. Schaub's really come into his own at quarterback. You know what their offense sort of reminds me of is a little bit of what the Ravens are kind of doing over there, and I expect the same kind of attack that the Ravens did week one. You know, they can run on the edges. They can run in between the tackles with that great blocking. They have two great tight ends in that Owen Daniels and the Casey kid. You know, who's kind of an H-back, but he can do some damage, as we saw, you know, last week against the Saints there. So, you know.
And you're right. And the good thing is at least the Steelers have been attacked this way previously. So hopefully they learn something from that.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're going to have Ike Taylor, of course, you know, lined up on Andre Johnson. And make no mistake, let me tell you, if Ike Taylor shuts Andre Johnson down to three or four catches for 40 yards, man, go ahead and get this guy his ticket to Hawaii right now, because Andre's going to get his catches, I think. You know, you just don't want him to beat you for a big play, something he's very capable of doing. So, you know, it's going to be a good test there. They're going to use these tight ends, man. You know, Owen Daniels and Casey, they're not bad at wide receiver, you know, with Kevin Walter and the Jones kid over there as well. I think they're going to be able to move the football. That's going to start on the ground. And I think Tomlin put it best. You know, you got to stop them first on the ground. I think they're going to get Arian Foster back. Even if they don't, that Ben Tate kid surely looks strong, so much so. And with Foster coming back, they released Steve Slayton yesterday as well. On the defensive side of the ball, hey, Mario Williams is really taking to this 3-4 outside line. You know, call him what you will, the defensive end, outside linebacker. He's sort of like James Harrison is to us. He can make big plays happen on the defensive side of the ball. That J.J. Watt kid really is coming on along real well. He has
done very well. The first round, he was the 11th overall pick out of Wisconsin, who Tomlin in his press conference said the Steelers had, you know, taken a close look at him.
Yeah, you know, he reminds you of a young Aaron Smith.
He's a big, strong kid who can get some pressure off the edge depending on what kind of formation they're using. But yeah, he, you know, any rookie in a scheme who's making it on the two lines, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, who's making an impression in the first 3 weeks, is clearly doing a lot of things right and is a talented kid.
You know, where the Texans have been struggling, though, and I think John McClain wrote about it in the Houston Chronicle this morning, saying they're soft mentally and physically, and that comes, I think, from Michael Lombardi's statement on NFL Network or NFL.com. Their red zone percentage is where they're hurting the worst right now. I think they're like 31, a little over 31% in the red zone right now, and that's what's killing them, and that's what kind of, you know, killed them against the Saints this past week, not being able to punch it in the red zone when they got in there. Otherwise, you know, on third down as well, not great at 40%. I think that still gets them, you know, 11th ranking in the league. But their kick return average has been good. Their punt return average has been good. You know, they might not be forcing the turnovers much like the Steelers, like they'd like to do. But, you know, a defense in a new scheme, you know, it's going to take some time getting used to that, I suppose. But I don't know. You know, this is a dangerous team. Let's face it. I mean, they can big play you. They can grind it out on the ground. You know, they're going to dare the Steelers to definitely run with them, you know, on the scoreboard this week, I think.
I'm totally in agreement with that, and I don't want to underplay how good I think Matt Schaub is. I think he is just below that. You know, we've talked about that elite group of NFL quarterbacks, the six guys who kind of stand out, and then who's next in that group. And I've been as much a fan of Matt Schaub as you are of Matt Ryan. I think this guy really has the talent to put up a lot of points and be an exceptional quarterback in the league. He led the league in passing yards 2 years ago. I think he was fourth last year. So Steelers are going to have their hands full.
It's going to start. You got to pressure him too, and that's something we have not been doing consistently yet. And I think, man, if you don't get pressure on this guy, the way that offensive line plays, if he's able to sit back there and pick you apart the way Steelers like to lay back in this zone, he'll do it, you know. And I think he's a type quarterback that can fit the ball into tight windows as well. This is going to be a good ball game.
Yeah, Dave. We'll get into all of this again on Friday, so I want to leave a little tease for the Friday podcast. But let's take a look around the NFL a little bit. We've seen injuries take their toll on teams like Kansas City. We saw Kenny Britt go down on Wednesday, one of the premier. It looks like he was breaking out, having a Mike Wallace-type start to the season as well, out for the season for Tennessee. Everybody knows the story with the Bills and the Lions as the two big surprises. Who jumps out at you as disappointments, teams that you thought would get off to a better start and haven't?
The Chargers really laid an egg this week. Now they're not going to. They're going to be without the services likely of who is it? Gates for a little while. It looks like. I mean, but this is a guy that's had some problems over the years with that foot, and I think it's that plantar.
Fasciitis
and all. They really haven't come out like I thought they would to start the year. New England, I mean, let's face it, they can put up points, but they're giving up the big plays on top of it, and that's what's killed. That's what killed them in the Bills game. Let's see who else is out there that's.
I think that's a pretty important point. Also, when we talk about the panic that the Steelers have. You know, we sit and we talk about the Steelers. We follow the Steeler media coverage. We have 90% of our attention focused on the black and gold and what's going on there. Let me tell you, in Boston, aside from all hell breaking loose because the Red Sox are having one of the biggest collapses in history, the concern about the Patriots defense is extraordinarily high. And they are running guys through their practice facility on a daily basis more than they do even regularly. And the Jets getting absolutely torched by the Raiders on their run defense. Another thing that has, you know, Joe Namath and others popping off to suggest that maybe they've been reading their press clippings. Out of that, what I take away is the Raiders are much better than I think they're much better than people think. They are going to be able to run the ball against anybody they want this year. Surprised that offensive line is as good as it is, but they have very good backs. This is a team for me that's the dark horse of the AFC.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I could see them, sneaking in at a wild card spot if they don't win the division, and that's still not out of the question. It's going to set up for some good games between the Raiders and the Chargers when those two get together. Now, on the flip side, getting back to the Patriots, there, I tell you what's going to be some good matchups at play in the favor of the Jets versus the Patriots this year is the Jets. You know, showed last didn't they beat them in the playoffs this past year?
Yeah,
they
beat the Colts.
Beat the Colts, okay. But they did beat the Patriots. Who knocked off the?
They did beat the Patriots in the first game, right?
Yeah, I thought they did because they used that six DBs, and that's kind of what I was referencing here. If they're able to slow down the Patriots' offense, you know, in any way, and keep them, you know, under, you know, 24 points on offense this year, which I think Rex Ryan will be able to do. I think he's kind of figured out what they like to try to do on the offense. You know, if you take away Wes Welker for the most part and let those corners do their job, you know, Revis and all like that, and the way they like to shuttle in like five and six defensive backs against that, if the Patriots can't run against them, you could see the Jets win both those games this year because of the way the Patriots defense has not been able to stop people this year. So I think I think there's definitely chinks in the armor. People want to point at the Steelers and all what's going on in the first three games. Let's face it, New England's in the same situation, 2-1, questions about their defense, not being able to run the ball all that effective either. So, you know, I think that division could be up in the air, especially the way Buffalo really has started nicely, to start this season.
Yeah, and Miami is not a bad team. They're not going to make the playoffs, but they're going to win six or seven. I would imagine at the end of the season they win six or seven games. What about your Falcons? I've never not been as high on the Falcons as you. They've had a tough schedule to open the season. They beat the Eagles after they lost tough games in the NFC to Tampa and Chicago on the road and beat the Eagles at home. So it's been a tough schedule for them. Any thoughts on where they are?
They can't keep people out of the face of Matt Ryan, for starters. That they can win at home, but they're going to have to win on the road this year if they want to make the playoffs. If not, they're going to be a 9-7 team or something like that, you know, or maybe even 10-6 and needing a wing and a prayer, you know, for a wild card spot. The Saints, you know, are going to be right there with them. So they just have not been able to on the road, and at home too against the Eagles. You saw them get after Matt Ryan too. There's only so much abuse this kid could take. Let's face it, he's not built like a Roethlisberger to take this kind of abuse. So, yeah, they have been a mild disappointment. Boy, all that, you know, trading up to get the wide receiver and all like that has not paid its dividends. Thank God for Tony Gonzalez bailing them out a few times and all. But, you know, if you take Roddy White away from them, you can moderately stop Michael Turner from killing the in-between the tackles. They're a team that can be beat.
Yeah. Just to preview some of the games this weekend, I think there's some really interesting ones. One that's interesting just because we want to find out if Buffalo is real, is Buffalo at Cincinnati. But then moving forward to really the kind of marquee games, you've got Detroit at Dallas, Pittsburgh at Houston. Those are two really good games at the 1 o'clock time slot. A little bit later in the day is you've got New England, and this is great for the Steelers here. You're going to get Steeler fans and the Steelers. You're going to get to watch a couple games later on Sunday. New England at Oakland. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how Oakland attacks New England if they try to make this a shorter game and just pound the ball. And then the Sunday night game, the beauty of this game is somebody's going to lose, the Jets playing at the Ravens.
Yeah, and that is going to be a good game. There are some good ones. Boy, let me tell you, the first half of the game Sunday, boy, there were all those games, I think, were within a touchdown at one point late.
All the 1 o'clock games.
Yeah, those are some great games there. That Ravens-Jets game is going to be a good one I'll have my eye on, and you pretty much nailed it on that. But, you know, pretty good football regardless of the lockout going on and how things, people thought, oh, Lord, what's this going to do to the game and all. But I thought overall through the first 3 weeks there have been some great games.
Yeah, certainly some exciting football. It doesn't look like there's a huge drop off in the skill level. Hard to evaluate if it's a drop off. It's been equal across the board. It seems like the injuries aren't any more significant or less significant. It's a violent game. Guys get hurt, but I will say I think the enforcement has been reasonably good. You're always going to have people complain about calls and things that happen during the course of the season, but it does look like players are doing a better job of understanding the rules and not killing each other. And B, I haven't seen things where the whole highlight shows at the end of the day on Sunday or Monday are littered with people talking about how, you know, these calls didn't get made and this call did get made and it wasn't the right call. It's not, it looks like generally through 3 weeks, the officiating has been reasonably good.
Well, there's a few calls every week, and they're going to be, and I expect that going forward. So I don't know. It's too early for me to really chime in on that. I think they're protecting a quarterback way too much, though, for starters. So I don't know. We'll see where it goes over the next couple weeks. But before we get out of here, I want to get your thoughts real quick. You know, the Hall of Fame, I guess the nominees will be up today, is it?
I think it is today,
and, of course, Jerome Bettis' name will be out there, I believe. I think Dawson could be up there again. And Bill Cowher is now eligible, and it's not getting a lot of press right now. But is Bill Cowher a first ballot Hall of Famer, in your opinion?
No chance. Okay. I mean, I love Bill Cowher, appreciate what he did. I think he has one of the big strikes against him is he's going to have a longevity issue. 15 years as a head coach is not nothing. He's got a Super Bowl win, but I don't think the one good thing I think about the NFL Hall of Fame versus some other Halls of Fame is it is not the Hall of Very Good. It is the Hall of Fame. And Cowher is certainly among the elite coaches in NFL history, but he's not amongst the very, very elite Hall of Fame caliber guys yet. If he comes back, coaches 10 more years and wins another Super Bowl or two, absolutely, he's in there for sure. But he's just in there with a bunch of other guys in my book at this point in time.
Do you think the Steelers' own standard has hurt him because of all those years of not, you know, of losing in those AFC championship games and only winning one Super Bowl through the course there? You know, let's face it, you've got people like Bud Grant and Marv Levy,
Yep.
And they didn't win a Super Bowl. But is the Steelers' own legacy hurting Cowher at this point, do you think?
I don't know that it hurt the legacy hurts him. I think it hurts him that he didn't win more AFC championship games. You know, the thing about Grant and Levy is they won all those championship games and lost the Super Bowls. Cowher, unfortunately, lost all the championship games. He got there a couple times, but you know, if he'd been there five times, this would be a very different discussion versus being there two times.
How many, let's say he wins, a couple of those AFC championship games and still loses the Super Bowl. Does your thoughts change?
I think if in 15 years he went to four Super Bowls, yeah, that would change my mind.
Even if he only won one?
Yep. You go to four Super Bowls in 15 years, that's pretty elite company.
Okay. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't think he's going to make it first ballot. I think he's going to have to come back and coach and do something for a second stint.
Now, let me ask you that question. Do you think he's going to do that?
Oh, yeah, he's coming back. The guy, Gruden, too. These guys can't stand it, you know?
Well, I don't know. They can't stand it. They're making $5-7 million. They got a good life. They're free for 5 months out of the year. It doesn't seem like either of them are in any hurry to get back.
Yeah, but it all boils down to, David, in life, you got to do what you love to do. Money does not buy happiness. It'll buy a yacht to pull up alongside of it, as David Lee Roth likes to say, but it does not buy happiness. It's in their blood to coach. It's what they do.
I would have agreed with you the first couple of years out, but he is now, obviously, he can only be eligible because it's been 5 years. So
it's the right situation coming along and being away from the game. I think Cowher does okay. Cowher's calling is not in the media, I assure you. And I think Gruden's good at what he does as well, too. But these guys are coming back. It's in their blood to do it. I think the Miami situation might be the perfect opportunity for Cowher, pretty soon. I expect that, he'll try to bring a few people with him. Omar Khan might be someone he tries to take with him as well, too, to try to build something like the Steelers have had over the years. So
I think the New York Giants job may well be open at the end of the year as well. And he would be, he and Gruden would certainly be early phone calls in that search.
I don't think he'd want to. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying it won't happen. I just think why thrust yourself right into the media capital of the world there in either of those situations there. So I would think maybe Miami or something else, around the league. Who else could he possibly land at? Maybe the Vikings, if they fail this year with Frazier, maybe that's an opportunity there with the young quarterback in in the fold there. In fact, that might be a good land for Gruden on down the line as well. The other teams, boy, Seattle's going to be in tough shape. Pete Carroll's not the answer there. The Rams at 0-3, I really thought the Rams were going to get off to a better start than they had this year. So that's been a disappointment there.
I don't think he or Carroll's losing their job this season. I would say guys who might be a little more on the hot seat would be had somebody on the tip of my tongue here. Well, certainly if Kubiak, if they fall apart, and I just wonder if the situation in Indianapolis, if there would be any chance for Caldwell. Obviously, the situation is dire without Peyton Manning. But if you're going to change your cast and turn that team over, you might want to turn the head coach over as well.
What about the Cardinals as well, too? Is Wiz on the hot seat?
I don't think he's on the hot seat. If they go 5-11, he's on the hot seat. But if they go 8-8, I think he's probably around for another year at least.
And what if the Texans collapse this year and don't?
If the Texans go 7-9, he's gone. See, I really think he has to go 9-7. He's had, I like Kubiak, and I think they've done the right thing by keeping him around for 6 years. But 6-10 last year was kind of the last straw. That they brought in Wade Phillips. It's go 9-7. And somehow get screwed out of making the playoffs or make the playoffs, or I think he's probably gone.
All right. Finish it up real quick. Your overall thought on the Steelers right now before we get into breaking down this game on Friday. Give me your overall fear right now.
Calm. I think this team is going to be fine offensively. I really think they'll be able to throw the ball well. Some concern about the offensive line and Rashard Mendenhall. I'm less concerned about the defense overall, although this game is, like you said, this game is going to tell us volumes about how good this team is. And I'll tease my pick is I don't think the Steelers win this game. And if they do, I think everybody can take a really deep breath because the biggest issue for this team has been the two sides of the ball on the run. They haven't been able to stop the run. They haven't been able to run the ball well. To win this game, they'll probably have to do both those things. So if they come out of this game with a win, I think everything will be great. If not, it's just going to further expose these two issues, in my opinion.
Panic button if they lose?
No, not at all. I think with Tennessee and Jacksonville coming right behind them, home games, and then at Arizona, I think if I have the schedule right in my head, those are three winnable games. If they don't come out with two wins out of those three, push the panic button. But I'm thinking this team is 5-2 after week 7, at worst 4-3. If they're anything different than that after week 7, then it's cause for concern.
All right, good stuff.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up, Dave. We will keep you posted on Twitter in terms of whether we're going to get this beat reporter for the Texans, and we'll either do something tomorrow and either post it or attach it to Friday's Terrible Podcast. But thank you for listening. And we will be back with episode 23 either tomorrow or Friday. You've been listening to Dave and Dave, the Terrible Podcast.